For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
On today's program, we will be bringing you the words of an amazing man, a man who I have brought to your attention on previous programs, Mr. Benjamin H. Friedman. Mr. Friedman, born in 1890, was a successful Jewish businessman of New York City, who was at one time the principal owner of the Woodbury Soap Company. He broke with organized Jewry in 1946 and spent the remainder of his life and the great preponderance of his considerable fortune, at least $2.5 million, exposing the Jewish tyranny which has enveloped this country. Mr. Friedman knew what he was talking about because he had been an insider at the highest levels of Jewish organizations and Jewish machinations to gain power over the United States. Mr. Friedman was personally acquainted with people like Bernard Baruch, Samuel Untermyer, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Joseph Kennedy, and John F. Kennedy, and many more movers and shakers of the 20th century. On today's program, we will be bringing you a recording of an important speech given by Mr. Friedman over 30 years ago, a very rare recording. If you want to know why Americans are losing their freedoms today at the hands of a tyrannical government, you will want to pay close attention to the revelations of Benjamin H. Friedman.
Here in the United States, the Zionists and their co-religionists have complete control of our government. For many reasons, too many and too complex to go in here, at this time, I'll be glad to answer questions, however, to support that statement. The Zionists and their co-religionists rule this United States as though they were the absolute monarchs of this country. Now you say, well, that's a very broad statement to make, but let me show what happened while you were... I don't want to wear that out. Let me show you what happened while we were all asleep. I'm including myself with you. We were all asleep. What happened? World War I broke out in the summer of 1914. 1914 was the year in which World War I broke out. There are a few people here my age who remember that. Now, that war was waged on one side by Great Britain, France, and Russia, and on the other side by Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey. What happened? Within 2 years, Germany had won that war. Not alone won it nominally, but won it actually. The German submarines, which were a surprise to the world, had swept all the convoys from the Atlantic Ocean, and Great Britain stood there without ammunition for her soldiers, stood there with 1 week's food supply facing her, and after that, starvation. At that time, the French army had mutinied. They lost 600,000 of the flower of the French youth in the defense of Verdun on the Somme. The Russian army was defecting. They were picking up their toys and going home. They didn't want to play war anymore. They didn't like the Tsar. And the Italian army had collapsed. Now, Germany, not a shot had been fired on the German soil. Not an enemy soldier had crossed the border into Germany. And yet, here was Germany offering England peace terms. They offered England a negotiated peace on what the lawyers call a status quo ante basis. That means let's call the war off and let everything be as it was before the war started. Well, England in the summer of 1916 was considering that seriously. They had no choice. It was either accepting this negotiated peace that Germany was magnanimously offering them or going on with the war and being totally defeated. While that was going on, the Zionists in Germany, who represented the Zionists from Eastern Europe, went to the British War Cabinet, and I'm going to be brief because this is a long story, but I have all the documents to prove any statement that I make if anyone here is curious or doesn't believe what I call possible. The Zionists in London went to the British War Cabinet and they said, look here, you can yet win this war. You don't have to give up. You don't have to accept a negotiated peace offered to you now by Germany. You can win this war if the United States will come in as your ally. The United States was not in the war at that time. We were fresh, we were young, we were rich, we were powerful. And they told England, we will guarantee to bring the United States into the war as your ally, to fight with you on your side, if you will promise us Palestine after you win the war. In other words, they made this deal. We will get the United States into this war as your ally. The price you must pay us is Palestine after you have won the war and defeated Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey. Now, England had as much right to promise Palestine to anybody as the United States would have to promise Japan to Ireland, for any reason whatsoever. It's absolutely absurd that Great Britain, that never had any connection or any interest or any right in what is known as Palestine, should offer it as coin of the realm to pay the Zionists for bringing the United States into the war. However, they made that promise in October of 1916. October 1916. And shortly after that, I don't know how many here remember it, the United States, which was almost totally pro-German, because the newspapers here were controlled by Jews, the bankers were Jews, all the media of mass communications in this country were controlled by Jews, and they were pro-German because their people, in a majority of cases, came from Germany, and they wanted to see Germany lick the Tsar. The Jews didn't like the Tsar, and they didn't want Russia to win this war. So the German bankers, the German Jews, Kuhn Loew, and the other big banking firms in the United States, refused to finance France or England to the extent of $1. They stood aside and they said, as long as France and England are tied up with Russia, not 1 cent. But they poured money into Germany. They fought with Germany against Russia, trying to lick the Tsarist regime. Now, those same Jews, when they saw the possibility of getting Palestine, they went to England and they made this deal. At that time, everything changed, like the traffic light that changes from red to green, where the newspapers had been all pro-German, where they'd been telling the people the difficulties that Germany was having fighting Great Britain commercially and in other respects. All of a sudden, the Germans were no good. They were villains. They were Huns. They were shooting Red Cross nurses. They were cutting off babies' hands, and they were no good. Well, shortly after that, Mr. Wilson declared war on Germany. The Zionists in London sent these cables to the United States, to Justice Brandeis, go to work on President Wilson. We're getting from England what we want. Now you go to work and you go to work on President Wilson and get the United States into the war. And that did happen. That's how the United States got into the war. We had no more interest in it. We had no more right to be in it than we have to be on the moon tonight instead of in this room. Now, the war, World War I, in which the United States participated, had absolutely no reason to be our war. We went in there, we were railroaded into it. If I can be vulgar, we were suckered into that war merely so that the Zionists of the world could obtain Palestine. Now, that is something that the people in the United States have never been told. They never knew why we went into World War I. Now, what happened? After we got into the war, the Zionists went to Great Britain and they said, well, we performed our part of the agreement. Let's have something in writing that shows that you are going to keep your bargain and give us Palestine after you win the war. Because they didn't know whether the war would last another year or another 10 years. So they started to work out a receipt. The receipt took the form of a letter, and it was worded in very cryptic language so that the world at large wouldn't know what it was all about. And that was called the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was merely Great Britain's promise to pay the Zionists what they had agreed upon as a consideration for getting the United States into the war. So this great Balfour Declaration that you hear so much about is just as phony as a $3 bill, and I don't think I can make it more emphatic than that. Now, that is where all the trouble started. The United States was in the war. The United States crushed Germany. We went in there, and it's history. You know what happened. Now, when the war was ended, and the Germans went to Paris, to the Paris Peace Conference in 1919, there were 117 Jews there as a delegation representing the Jews, headed by Bernard Baruch. I was there, I ought to know. Now what happened? The Jews at that peace conference, when they were cutting up Germany and parceling out Europe to all these nations that claimed a right to a certain part of European territory, the Jews said, how about Palestine for us? And they produced, for the first time to the knowledge of Germans, this Balfour Declaration. So the Germans, for the first time, realized, oh, that was the game. That's why the United States came into the war. And the Germans, for the first time, realized that they were defeated. They suffered this terrific reparations that was slapped onto them because the Zionists wanted Palestine. And they were determined to get it at any cost. Now, that brings us up to another very interesting point. When the Germans realized this, they naturally resented it. Up to that time, the Jews had never been better off in any country in the world than they had been in Germany. You had Mr. Rathenau there, who was maybe 100 times as important in industry and finance as Bernard Baruch in this country. You had Mr. Baleen, who owned the two big steamship lines, the North German Lloyd and the Hamburg American Line, thank you. You had Mr. Bleichsröder, who was the banker for the Hohenzollern family. You had the Warburgs in Hamburg, who were the big merchant bankers, the biggest in the world. The Jews were doing very well in Germany. No question about that. Now, the Germans felt, well, that was quite a sellout. It was a sellout that I can best compare. Suppose The United States was at war today with the Soviet Union. And we were winning. And we told the Soviet Union, well, let's quit. We offer you peace terms. Let's forget the whole thing. And all of a sudden, Red China came into the war as an ally of the Soviet Union. And throwing them into the war brought about our defeat, a crushing defeat, with a reparation the likes of which man's imagination cannot encompass. Imagine, then, if we found out that it was the Chinese in this country, our Chinese citizens, who all the time we thought they were loyal citizens working with us, were selling us out to the Soviet Union, and it was through them that Red China was brought into the war against us. How would we feel in the United States against Chinese? I don't think one of them would dare show his face on any street. There wouldn't be lampposts enough convenient to take care of them. Imagine how we would feel. Well, that's how the Germans felt towards these Jews. We've been so nice to them, and from 1905 on, when the first communist revolution in Russia failed and the Jews had to scramble out of Russia, they all went to Germany, and Germany gave them refuge, and they were treated very nicely. And here, they sold Germany down the river for no reason at all, other than they wanted Palestine as a so-called Jewish commonwealth. Now, Nahum Sokolow, all the great leaders, the big names that you read about in connection with Zionism today, they, in 1919, 1920, 21, 22, and 23, they wrote in all their papers, and the press was filled with their statements, that the feeling against the Jews in Germany is due to the fact that they realized that this great defeat was brought about by our intercession and bringing the United States into the war against them. The Jews themselves admitted that. It wasn't that the Germans in 1919 discovered that a glass of Jewish blood tasted better than Coca-Cola or Münchner beer. There was no religious feeling. There was no sentiment against those people merely on account of their religious belief. It was all political. It was economic. It was anything but religious. Nobody cared in Germany whether a Jew went home and pulled down the shades and said Shema Yisrael or Our Father. No one cared in Germany any more than they do in the United States. Now, this feeling that developed later in Germany was due to one thing, that the Germans held the Jews responsible for their crushing defeat for no reason at all, because World War I was started against Germany for no reason for which they were responsible. They were guilty of nothing, only of being successful. They built up a big navy. They built up world trade. You must remember, Germany, at the time of Napoleon, at the time of the French Revolution, what was the German Reich, consisted of 300 small city-states, principalities, dukedoms, and so forth. 300 little separate political entities. And between that time, between the period of between Napoleon and Bismarck, they were consolidated into one state. And within 50 years after that time, they became one of the world's great powers. Their navy was rivaling Great Britain. They were doing business all over the world. They could undersell anybody and make better products. And what happened? What happened as a result of that? There was a conspiracy between England, France, and Russia that we must slap down Germany, because there isn't one historian in the world that can find a valid reason why those three countries decided to wipe Germany off the map politically. Now, what happened after that? When Germany realized that the Jews were responsible for her defeat, they naturally resented it. but not a hair on the head of any Jew was harmed. Not a single hair. Professor Tanzel of Georgetown University, who had access to all the secret papers of the State Department, wrote in his book and quoted from a State Department document written by Hugo Schoenfeld, a Jew who Cordell Hull sent to Europe in 1933 to investigate the so-called camps of political prisoners. And he wrote back that he found them in very fine condition. They were in excellent shape. Everybody treated well. And they were filled with communists. Well, a lot of them were Jews, because the Jews happened to be maybe 98% of the communists in Europe at that time. And there were some priests there and ministers, labor leaders, masons, and others who had international affiliations. Now, the Jews sort of tried to keep the lid on this fact. They didn't want the world to really understand that they had sold out Germany and that the Germans resented that. So they did take appropriate action against them. They, shall I say, discriminated against them wherever they could. They shunned them, the same as we would the Chinese or the Negroes or the Catholics or anyone in this country that sold us out to an enemy and brought about our defeat. Now, after a while, the Jews of the world didn't know what to do. So they called a meeting in Amsterdam. Jews from every country in the world attended in July 1933. And they said to Germany, you fire Hitler and you put every Jew back into his former position, whether he was a communist, no matter what he was. You can't treat us that way. And we, the Jews of the world, are calling upon you and serving this ultimatum upon you. Well, the Germans told them, you can imagine. So what did they do?
American Dissident Voices, an island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. For a catalog of books, tapes, and videos that the censors of political correctness don't want you to see, just send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
You have been listening to a speech by Jewish author and speaker Mr. Benjamin H. Friedman. Mr. Friedman was a successful Jewish businessman who broke with organized Jewry at the age of 55 and spent the rest of his life and most of his fortune trying to awaken Americans to their peril. We will be continuing with Mr. Friedman's speech on our next program. You can have a cassette copy of this program entitled Benjamin Friedman Speaks for $12 postpaid. Send a gift of $12 or more today and ask for our tape, Benjamin Friedman Speaks. Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. You can receive a collection of our best articles collected in a huge 217-page coffee table size book for a gift of $25 or more as our radio offer number 4 from the same address. That's $25 for our big book of patriotic articles. Ask for radio offer number 4. I also urge you to subscribe to our newsletter, Free Speech, which provides in printed form every month the very best American Dissident Voices programs, packed with news, analysis, and information you cannot get anywhere else. Send $40 today and ask for a year's subscription to Free Speech. Your support is what keeps us on the air in these perilous times for freedom of speech. Subscribe to Free Speech today. Write to National Vanguard Books. Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Sometime in the near future, if Americans do nothing to reclaim their nation, you may hear this sad lament in an America no longer free. When they took the Fourth Amendment, I was quiet because I had nothing to hide. When they took the Sixth Amendment, I was quiet because I had committed no crime. When they took the Second Amendment, I was quiet because I didn't own a gun. Now they've taken the First Amendment, and I can say nothing about it. Remember also the words of Benjamin Franklin from the year 1773, as Americans were preparing to throw off the tyranny of the established government of their day. Quote, "Those that give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." Close quote. Think about Franklin's words, and I'll see you next week on American Dissident Voices.
You've been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the volunteers to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.